All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Wednesday. we're here for, well, I started to say gentle healing, but that's a lie. We're here for guiding. No, we're not here for guiding light either. What are we here for? Enlightened leadership. Okay, good. Well, all I have to do first is play a song. So let's see if I can manage that. Let me share my screen. This is Josh Groban. It's a great song, isn't it? Did anybody else get chills? Woo! Very, very, very nice song. I'm glad I remembered it today. Well, let me, you're not seeing my screen anyway. I was going to say, let me minimize some of this other stuff that I have up, but I quit sharing my screen, so it doesn't matter. All right, we're here for enlightened leadership. That means I read from the Tao Te Ching. And I did know that, even though I couldn't remember the name of the program, because I have... Look what's on the sofa next to me. 4 copies of the Tao Te Ching laying there, ready to go. So we're doing verse 32 today, and I will start with Derek Lynn. The Tao, eternally nameless. Its simplicity, although imperceptible, cannot be treated by the world as subservient. If the sovereign can hold on to it, all will follow by themselves. Heaven and earth, together in harmony, will rain sweet dew. People will not need to force it. It will adjust by itself. In the beginning, there were names. Names came to exist everywhere. One should know when to stop. Knowing when to stop, thus avoiding danger. The existence of the Tao in the world is like streams in the valley flow into rivers and the ocean. So obviously we're going to look at these other books. That's what I like to do. I like to read several copies of the Tao. But one thing I want to comment on before I move on is that what I see in this as a really, really strong theme, and again, remember the Tao is written for leaders. I see that if the leaders live in harmony with the Tao, then the followers will follow that lead, right? That's what they do. They follow the leaders. They'll follow that lead. They'll also fall into harmony with the Tao. And then when at least the majority, if not everyone, is in harmony with the Tao, then all of the problems in the world will begin to correct themselves. How cool is that?
Very cool.
Yeah, very cool. That's the moral of this little story here. But let's hear how others tell this little story. So we'll go to Wayne Dyer next. By the way, did you know that Wayne Dyer died in his sleep? Isn't that cool?
Yes.
You know, when somebody dies in their sleep, it's like, wow, that's, you know, they must have been, to me, that's pretty cool. That's like the best way to go. You just go to sleep and you never wake up. Yes. Okay, so this is what Wayne Dyer says. The eternal Tao has no name, although simple and subtle. No one in the world can master it. If kings and lords could harness them, the 10,000 things would naturally obey. Heaven and earth would rejoice with the dripping of sweet dew. Everyone would live in harmony, not by official decree, but by their own goodness. Once the whole is divided, the parts need names. There are already enough names. Know when to stop. Know when reason sets limits to avoid peril. Rivers and streams are born of the ocean, and all creation is born of the Tao. Just as all water flows back to become the ocean, all creation flows back to become the Tao. So he mentions the dew, and Derek Lynn mentioned the dew, and it reminds me of a story. I'm not teaching this next story as a truth, by the way. It's just a concept for contemplation. But some of you might know that when I was younger, I was one of Jehovah's Witnesses. And Jehovah's Witnesses teach that originally the world was perfect. It was a paradise earth. You know, we get this from Genesis. Until Adam and Eve ate of the fruit of the tree. And then they were kicked out of the Garden of Eden. And, you know, part of the punishment was Adam had to work by the sweat of his brow, which meant there were thistles and thorns and rocks and, you know, the world just hasn't been perfect ever since. That's the story. And I remember, and also the Jehovah's Witnesses believe that eventually the world will return to that paradise because God's promise can be temporarily put aside, but God's promise cannot be crushed, not even by Satan, right? So there will be a return to that original plan. First of all, I don't think anything's wrong with rain myself. But I remember as a young person sitting in some meeting where we were discussing all of this, and somebody brought up the topic as rain. And I guess the perception was that rain was a part of the imperfect world. You know, like only beautiful sunny days are perfect and rain is imperfect. But somebody asked, without the rain, you know, how would the crops be watered? And the answer that we were given was that, again, I'm not teaching this as a truth, I'm teaching this as a concept for contemplation. The answer that we were given was that prior to the fall, there was no rain, but there was a heavy dew every night. And that heavy dew was enough to water the earth. So I just find it interesting that both of these mention this dew, right? Derek Lynn says, heaven and earth together in harmony will rain sweet dew. Of course, that mentions the word rain too. And this one says, heaven and earth would rejoice with the dripping of sweet dew. So the dew, you know, whether it's factual or not, is a symbol of everything being perfectly taken care of, right? It's everything is being perfectly taken care of. That's what the dew represents. All right, let's move on to another translation. We'll go to this new one that I've been using that Judd sent to me. This is Victor H. Mayer. And remember, this one is from a new transcript, the Ma Wing Tui manuscript. The way is eternally nameless. Though the unhewn log is small, no one in the world dares subjugate it. If feudal lords and kings could maintain it, the myriad creatures would submit of themselves. Heaven and earth unite to suffuse sweet dew. Without commanding the people, equality will naturally ensue. As soon as one begins to divide things up, there are names. Once there are names, one should also know when to stop. Knowing when to stop, one thereby avoids peril. In metaphorical terms, the relationship of all under heaven to the way is like that of valley streams to the river and sea. So I want to comment a little bit. All three of them have talked about that when you begin to divide things up, there are names, and that you need to know when to stop naming in order to avoid peril. One of the practices that we recommend when a person is aspiring towards awakening is to begin to see everyone and everything as consciousness. In fact, I think I wrote something like this in my journal recently, so why don't we look at my journal? All right, let's go to... Of course, you know, it will take me a moment to find it, or maybe it will be the top thing. I don't know. I'll try to keep talking while I'm doing this because we don't like quiet air because then people think something's wrong with the radio. Okay, I think it's this one, number 1154. Conditioning is learned. What I am is unlearned. I do not have opinions. Conditioning does. If I were born in another place or time, the opinions would be different. I am always the same. I am everyone, right there, behind their conditioned opinions, behind their conditioned beliefs, behind their conditioned desires and attachments. There I am, here I am, unconditioned and undisturbed. So what this single quiet thought is recommending, you know, is that when we look at people, instead of seeing, you know, Don who thinks this way and Ann who thinks this way and Shauna who thinks this way, etc., that we see the thinking differently as mere conditioning, and that we look behind the conditioning or beyond the conditioning to the consciousness, to the awareness that's exactly the same for all of us. And we name that I. Not her, not him, I. So you only have one name instead of 10,000 names, right? And then you can begin to extend that to the trees, to the leaves, to the animals. You know, you look at the life awareness, the life consciousness, maybe is a better term for some people. And you name that I, right? And of course you do this silently. I would share another thing with you, but it would take so long to find it, I think. It would be right after I got back from Yellowstone. Does anybody know when I got back from Yellowstone? The date, that would help. But basically, when I was in Yellowstone, I saw a number of different animals, you know, like you do when you're in Yellowstone. It's probably in here somewhere. It'd be nice if there were dates. Oh, there are dates. Woohoo! But that all says October, September. So maybe it's before that. I saw a lot of different animals while I was in Yellowstone. And one thing that happened for me as I saw all of these different animals was I kept seeing consciousness. So when I got back, I wrote about it. We'll see if I can find it really quickly. If not, we'll leave it behind. But it's really the same lesson as the one I just read. Yeah, I may not be able to find it quickly. I need to, oh, here it is. Woohoo! Just as I was getting ready to give up. Okay, so this is after returning from Yellowstone. I am that, these are all animals that I saw there, or things that I saw there. I am that, which is the wolf, which is the moose, which is the bear, which is the elk, which is the eagle, which is the bluebird, which is the duck, which is the fish, which is the dragonfly, which is the gnat, which is the flower, which is the grass, which is the ant, which is it all. I am not the diversity. I am the common denominator, the uncreated, right? So giving everything and everyone the name I, that's what this is talking about. I'll read this again from this version of the Tao. As soon as one begins to divide things up, there are names. Once there are names, one should know when to stop. Knowing when to stop, one thereby avoids peril. And of course, the peril is the belief in separation. Now, obviously, you would seem crazy or foolish to the average person in the world to go around out loud calling everything I. And in fact, if I wanted to talk to one of you, if I said, I, will you please take the mic? You guys would have no friggin' idea who I was talking to. So outwardly, and if I said I saw I at the Yellowstone, nobody would have any idea. You know, so obviously on a practical level, we still use the many names, right? But this is an inward contemplation that occurs. I, right? As Ann is teaching, I. As Josh Groban is singing, I. In fact, what was happening for me naturally, because it happens naturally now, I didn't know what I was going to be reading today. I hadn't done anything but turn to the proper page. But when we were watching that Josh Groban video and all those different faces were appearing, I was seeing I and all of those faces, right? I. Again, you're looking at the life consciousness. The life consciousness in a person, the life consciousness in an animal, the life consciousness in a plant, even the life consciousness in the breeze. I. All right, let's look at Stephen Mitchell. The Tao can't be perceived. Smaller than an electron, it contains uncountable galaxies. If powerful men and women could remain centered in the Tao, all things would be in harmony. The world would become a paradise. And notice he doesn't mention the do. He doesn't use the word do, but remember I told you what I was taught in Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, about there would be no rain because for somehow rain's not perfect. There would be this do. So that do somehow is a symbol for paradise. You know, the others used the word do, but he interestingly translated it to paradise. The world would become a paradise and people would be at peace and the law would be written in their hearts. When you have names and forms, know that they are provisional. When you have institutions, know where their functions should end. Knowing when to stop, you can avoid any danger. All things end in the Tao as rivers flow into the sea. So that's reading all four versions. And, you know, it's difficult to focus on four versions. So I just always feel a certain one or a certain two that I want to focus on. And today I'm feeling Wayne Dyer and Stephen Mitchell. So let's go back to Wayne Dyer. The eternal Tao has no name, although simple and subtle. No one in the world can master it. I just want to peek at what Derek said here, because he didn't say that. Oh, he said it cannot be treated by the world as subservient, right? So one thing that people try to do, and I've always intuitively known that this was a mistake, one thing that people try to do sometimes as they're learning spirituality is they try to take command of the Tao, even if they don't call it the Tao. They try to take command of the Tao. In our culture right now, this tends to be called the law of attraction. It's about realizing that everything is I, which is what I just taught you. Everything is I. But then it's taking the next step is a mistake. The next step is, therefore, I can manage it or control it or direct it for my benefit. Right? It's I. It'll listen to me. You know? And lots of people attempt to do this. It's really a huge error. The reason it's a huge error is because it holds on to the idea, even though it has the everything is I in it, it somehow holds on to the idea of this mind and this conditioning is me. Right? Remember what I read to you from my journal a bit ago. Conditioning is learned. I am unlearned. If I was born in another place or time, the conditioning would be different. So the last thing that Regina wanted, which now she not only no longer wants, but has, she quit wanting it and then it came anyway, was a house in La Vida. That was my last dream, right? Well, let's rewind to a time when I didn't have a house in La Vida. Let's even rewind back before there was a condo. Let's even rewind back before there was a retreat house. Let's rewind back before there was anything there that, you know, Regina was associated with. If I had been making this error, then what I would have been doing is contemplating on, meditating on the fact that I and everything and everyone involved in finding properties in La Vida was also I. And I would be concentrating my mind towards having everything and everyone work together to manifest for me a house. But who was it that wanted a house in La Vida in the first place? Wasn't that a conditioned mind? You know, I mean, another conditioned mind doesn't want a house in La Vida. It wants a house on the beach. Another conditioned mind wants a penthouse in New York City overlooking Central Park. Another conditioned mind dreams of a little farm with, you know, some chickens and some goats. Another conditioned mind dreams of a huge cattle ranch. I mean, you know, and I'm sure there are others that I would never even think of because their conditioning is so far from mine. It would amaze me what they, what their dream would be. So when I see everything as I, but I think I can direct it to get what I want, I am mistakenly thinking I am my conditioning. I'm still thinking I'm this person. So what these are very clear on is that the Tao is not something to be mastered, or the Tao is not subservient to you. And again, this is very important because we're talking to leaders. We're talking to, again, kings in ancient China. And you can imagine, you know, it probably didn't take much to imagine because all humans are the same. You can imagine how a king, as soon as he starts hearing about the Tao, if he believes in it at all, might immediately start thinking about how he can use it to extend his kingdom, right? And so it's really important. The Tao says, no, 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 that's not what the Tao is about. The Tao is not meant to be used, right? The Tao is not meant to be commanded. The Tao is not subservient to you. You can't master the Tao. And I think it's really important to know you can't master the Tao, because there are people who, again, are attempting to do so. And some of these people ignore their failures and only talk about their successes. But no one can master the Tao. And the reason no one can master the Tao is because we're all a part of it. You know, no one is in control of the rest of us. We're all feeding into it. We're all a part of it. So no one person could manipulate the Tao single-handedly and cause the entire universe to be the way that person's conditioning wants it, right? And anybody who has ever practiced the law of attraction, if they're completely honest, yes, they may have had some successes, but they've also had some failures. And it's not because they're not good enough at the law of attraction. It's because you can't master the Tao. The Tao will never be subservient to one human conditioned mind. Right? And obviously, this isn't what it's about. Another way to look at it also is if you're attempting to master the Tao, aren't you, with the Tao, still pushing the pendulum? And the Tao is going to be the Tao, which means that pendulum is going to come back in the opposite direction to an equal degree. So one imagined scenario that has probably come true in the past, although I don't know of it specifically, but it makes sense that this has happened. You know, a lot of people in attempting to master the Tao or in attempting to practice the law of attraction want money, right? And money is a big one. So maybe, and in fact, you can read stories about people who wanted $100,000, and then somehow a check for $100,000 showed up, right? So we know that these kinds of things can happen. But that's pushing the Tao this way, and you get the $100,000. And then the pendulum swings the other way, and maybe your marriage goes sour. Or you get a physical illness, you know, or something else, right? It doesn't mean you can't push the pendulum. But like I said, that one day, you can't control the pendulum and make it stay there, right? Once the pushing action stops, the pendulum naturally swings in the opposite direction to an equal degree. So it's important to accept you cannot master the Tao. So what's our job? If our job isn't to master the Tao, what's our job? Our job is to be empty, to listen to it. We let it master us. And I see you guys smiling, so I know you can feel the difference in your heart, right? I know you can feel the difference in your heart. And you know what that heart is giving you? That's a confirmation that this is the truth. You're not sitting there with your heads having to struggle to understand, what's Regina mean we let the Tao master us? You guys understood that immediately. You felt it. You smiled, right? Don says it's soft. There's a lightness. That's the Tao itself communicating with you, saying yes. And if we allow the Tao to master us, if we become subservient to the Tao, we then come in harmony with the Tao. And then when we're in harmony with the Tao, everything that we do, say, is in harmony with the Tao, and it is actually a corrective energy in the universe. Now, to people who don't know anything about this, depending on what your corrective energy does, you know, you may still look like somebody who's trying to fix the world, right? You know, depending on what your corrective energy does, you know. So, for example, my corrective energy appears to teach, spiritual teacher, right? So people might think that, you know, well, Regina, you're still trying to fix everyone. You're still trying to get them to listen to the teachings and change the way they're being and come in harmony with the Tao. But that's not true. There's not a conscious idea here at all that people need this help and therefore I will help them. This is just what happens when the corrective energy comes through this body-mind personality, right? My job is simply to remain centered with the Tao, subservient to the Tao, and allow the Tao to move me in any way that it will, or not at all. Right? Sit on a park bench for 2 years, or three, or four, or five. So the eternal Tao has no name, although simple and subtle. No one in the world can master it. So you might as well just quit trying. If kings and lords could harness them, now it's interesting, the 10,000 things would naturally obey. It's interesting, he says harness them. So let's look at some other people to see how they translate that. If the sovereign can hold on to it, right, it being the Tao, if feudal lords and kings could maintain it, if powerful men and women could remain centered in the Tao. I think they're all saying the same thing, but I love the way Stephen Mitchell says it. It's very, very clear. If powerful men and women could remain centered in the Tao. And remember, this is an enlightened leadership class. So what it's really talking about is if the enlightened leader just focuses on remain centered in the Tao. That's it. That's the totality of the enlightened leader's job. One of the things that we've had to do this week, Cheryl, Jacqueline, and I, was we needed to create the 2020 retreat schedule for the retreat house. And one thing Jacqueline did while I was in Yellowstone was she created a survey asking people what they wanted, which it's natural to go out and ask people what they want when you serve other people, right? But only 29 people filled out the survey. And, you know, typically we have around, it goes out, our daily update goes out to over 600 people, and typically 30% of the people every day actually open the daily update, which is really going to be more than 200 people. And yet only 29 filled it out. So for us, what that immediately communicated was that the data, it's not good data. It's not strong data. It would have been stronger data if 100 people or 75 people had filled it out. It would have been a better sampling. But with only 29 people filling it out, it's not really strong data. And in fact, when I went within and asked for guidance about that, the guidance that I was received was to ignore the data and follow intuition. So yesterday, Cheryl and Jacqueline and I gathered, and we still had the data in front of us, but we were looking at it very lightly. And one thing we did, we would go month by month. Okay, first we had picked out the dates, and then we went month by month. Okay, January, what should we offer? And we felt within, right? And whoever felt something would say it out loud, and the others would feel within and either confirm it or throw out something else, and we would feel within. It wasn't even what I would call a discussion. And it certainly didn't resemble a debate. It was literally the most perfect meeting I've had in the 6.5 years, is that right? 6.5 years that I've been the president of Awakening Together. I would like to see all of our meetings go like that one did. It was very, very clear that the three of us were checking in with intuition, sharing what we felt intuitively, checking in again, and then coming to a consensus answer based on intuition. That's what this is recommending. Right? Being centered in the Tao, not centered in your head, not centered in the data, not centered in your desires or your goals. If kings and lords could harness them, which really means be centered in the Tao, the 10,000 things would naturally obey. Now that's kind of interesting. You know, again, we're not trying to master the Tao. We're not trying to get anything to obey. But what this tells me is because we had this meeting yesterday where everything was decided intuitively, there's a perfection that's going to follow that schedule. Now, what that perfection is, I can't say. Even if I attempted to define what that perfection was, like that perfection means sold out retreats all year long, or that perfection means a certain amount of profit, or that perfection means that would be me leaving the Tao. Right? But because we chose the schedule for 2020 with intuition, I know, there's not even a doubt in my mind, that there's a perfection that's going to come out of that. But it's not my job to define what that perfection is. I mean, that perfection could be nobody comes to the retreats. And Jacqueline and Sherla, I get a heck of a lot of healing and we're more enlightened by the end of next year. I mean, who knows what the perfection is, right? But I promise you there will be a perfection. Because that's the way the Tao works. And again, that's without trying to master it. That's being subservient to it. So if kings and lords could harness them, the 10,000 things would naturally obey. Heaven and earth would rejoice with the dripping of sweet dew. And we've seen and we've had it confirmed by Stephen Mitchell that the dew represents paradise. Nothing wrong, right? Nothing wrong. And so again, this is saying that if we all bring ourselves into harmony, there will be a perfection that could be called paradise. Nothing could go wrong in the world if we were all subservient to the Tao. Nothing could go wrong in the world if we quit trying to fix things by pushing the pendulum. And you know, that's another thing that didn't happen yesterday. Not once in that meeting, not once in that meeting yesterday did anybody say anything like, what can we do to get more people to come to the retreat house? I didn't hear that once. It really was a perfect meeting. There's nothing there that we were trying to fix. We were just doing our job, which was creating a schedule. And we were doing it intuitively, and the schedule got created. End of story. And now we're beginning to communicate it to people. If kings and lords could harness them, the 10,000 things would naturally obey. Heaven and earth would rejoice with the dripping of sweet dew. Everyone would live in harmony, not by official decree, but by their own goodness. There's one thing that I have always just kind of intuitively felt. I don't have any proof of this, except maybe I see it happening in my own life. Again, some people make the mistake of imagining that if the world was perfect, everybody would have plenty of money. Everybody would have plenty of food. Everybody would have. That's never the way that I've felt on the inside. To me, that's coming from a mind, right? the way I've felt from the inside is that if the world was in perfect harmony, the minute somebody needed something, someone would show up to give it to them. It's not that we all have, you know, $10 million in the bank. It's just that those who do have $10 million with the bank are guided how to distribute it. You know, as soon as somebody needs a bed, somebody gives them a bed, right, Shauna? If somebody needs a new log cabin, somebody tells her friends about a log cabin, right, Shauna? Shauna knows these things are true. It happened to her in the last week. You know? As soon as somebody needs, then somebody shows. I mean, can I talk about your log cabin? Is it okay, Shauna? So Shauna lives in a little log cabin in La Vida that's been for sale for like 7 years now, a long time. And as things would have it happen, it is under contract now, and it does appear that it's going to go through, that it's probably going to sell. This is a different story than the stories before. So this means Shauna has to find a new place to live. Now, I'll tell you one thing about La Vida. If you want to rent, there's almost no place. There's just no place to rent in La Vida. What happened was Jacqueline and I were walking to the post office, and there's it's kind of like a log cabin across the street from the post office, but it's not a home. It doesn't have a kitchen in it. It's just like a big room. It's more like it could be a small church or something. You know, it's a big meeting room and a bathroom. And, Jacqueline and I happen to be looking in the windows, just checking this place out because it's for sale. And this lady comes up to us and says, "Oh, are you looking for a cabin to rent?" No, we weren't. But we said, "Oh, well, our friend is, you know." And she said, "Oh, well, there's a cabin down here." She told us exactly where it was. She said, "It's unlocked. Go look at it." You know, I texted Sean and I said, "We're going to go look at a cabin for you. Do you want to come?" And she just happened to just then become available. We met. We walked. She liked it. And was it the next day you had a lease? You see, that's how everything would work. It's not that Shauna had $1 million in the bank and a cabin that nobody would ever rent. It's that a place to live was provided. And when somebody else needed that place to live, and I assure you the one who's moving in needs it. I won't tell his story, but this is where God is sending him. God needs to put him right there, right? The Tao needs to put him right there, and this is a true story. And then just rearrange Shauna to over here. You know, everybody's taken care of. There is no loss. That's the perfection that we would see, right? So, So if kings and lords could harness them, the 10,000 things would naturally obey. Heaven and earth would rejoice with the dripping of sweet dew. Everyone would live in harmony, not by official decree, but by their own goodness. And he says their own goodness. Over here it says, heaven and earth together in harmony will rain sweet dew. People will not need to force it. It will adjust by itself. I mean, we're talking about things naturally happening, naturally occurring. And you know, this is what Jesus taught in the Sermon on the Mount, right? When he said, look at the lilies of the field, look at the birds of the air, right? How they're taken care of. And again, you can trust if you seek ye first the kingdom, right? You will be taken care of like them. All things will be added to you. It's the same teaching. Once the whole is divided, the parts need names. There are already enough names. Know when to stop. Know when reason sets limits to avoid peril. So I've already talked about this. You know, this is inside, not outside, because you'd sound like a weirdo. I. Right? You know, let's go ahead and do it now with those of us who are here. You know, let's look at Dawn and just think, I. Remember, you're looking beyond the face. You're looking beyond the conditioning, beyond the personality to the conscious awareness, life consciousness. And then look at Shauna. Do the same thing and say, I. And then look at Sharon. Do the same thing. I. And then Anne. I. And then Cheryl popped into play. So let's look at her. Like beyond the personality, beyond the conditioning, to the conscious awareness. I. And then Meg popped into play. So let's look at her. I. And then Kate popped into play. So let's look at her. I. Let's look at Regina. I. And do any of you doubt for a second that what we're really contemplating, that life consciousness, do any of you doubt for a second that it's exactly the same in each of us? That it really is the same I? Right? And now if you have a window nearby, look outside. Look at a cloud or a tree or a pet. Look at Reggie. I. Right? How does that make you feel on the inside, by the way? Are you getting another confirmation? Right? You know, one of the things that you can tell when you're aligned with truth is because of how you feel. I mean, this feels good, doesn't it? That's the truth telling us that we are doing the right thing, meaning pointing in the right direction, right? I. So once the whole is divided, the parts need names. Yeah, sure. Like I said, I'm going to have to say things like, Meg, go ahead, take the mic. Because if I just say, I take the mic, you guys have no idea, right? I mean, so things need names, but know when to stop. In other words, you don't take the names on as the facts. The names are for practical use only. Within yourself, as you look at people, listen to people, as you look at nature, pay attention to nature, you want to make it a contemplation of I, not a mental, you know, that you can always feel it when somebody's saying, oh, you're me. But you know, like there's nothing underneath it. They just read that in A Course in Miracles or something. Not a mental concept, an actual contemplation that life consciousness is always the same. That there's one life consciousness and the 10,000 things are all it. That's the contemplation that you want when you're with people, animals, nature, and eventually you'll be able to do it with a table. In fact, Jesus, I think it's workbook lesson 15, he uses the table as the example. If you could just see this table as it actually is, and he's talking about life consciousness. The table is also life consciousness. The table is also I. Most people find it easier to start with either people or animals. That, again, depends on the conditioning, or nature, like flowers. Most people don't start with tables. But if you're different than most people and you can start with tables, go right ahead. I. And there's nothing selfish or self-centered or arrogant in that I. It's the I that is all things. Cheryl says the carpet downstairs was alive and seemed to be moving when we were gathered on Sunday. It was cool. And of course, you guys have probably heard my story about when I was in China. You know, when I reached out for the towel and I felt the love coming from the towel rack. And then I went to dance and I felt the love coming from the floor, right? That was my first experience of what we would call inanimate things as consciousness love, right? So that was my first, up until that day, I only considered what we consider living things to be living, to be consciousness. And after that day, I knew for a fact that I had been wrong, that everything is life, consciousness, love. I mean, the chair you're sitting in or the ground you're laying on in Anne's case. That which is embracing your body in this moment is life, consciousness, love, or if it helps you to really feel the love, that which is embracing your body right now is God. Think about your chair or the ground as God. And that's the truth of it. And then this last paragraph, rivers and streams are born of the ocean and all creation is born of the Tao. I mean, we're all that same I. You know, we appear to be Don and Shauna and Regina and Sharon and Ann and Meg and Cheryl and Kate and Andy and Jay and Kathy and Linda and Jay again. You know, we appear to be those things, but what we really are is I. And another thing that anyone who's absolutely honest knows that eventually this I, this body-mind personality, is going to die. It's going to happen to each and every one of us. Right? And if we don't return to the I before then through what we call awakening or enlightenment, we'll return to the I then. Right? Everything goes back to the I. Because everything is the I. And any appearance, including you, is a temporary manifestation within the I. Temporary manifestation within the I. And that's what awakening is. Awakening is realizing I am the I. I'm not this person, I'm not this body, I'm not this mind. I'm the Alpha and the Omega, before and after, beginning and end. Let's just see if Stephen Mitchell says anything in the last 3 minutes that we want to focus on. He does have this one thing, which isn't in the others, but I think it's worth bringing up. When you have institutions, know where their functions should end. Again, one thing that happens when people start organizations like Awakening Together or the Awakening Together Retreat House or anything else, people become attached to what they've started, and it becomes about the organization, right? It's not anyone's job to make Awakening Together last forever or to make the Awakening Together Retreat House last forever. The only job we have is to be subservient to the Tao. It's the only job we have. So we don't want to become attached to our institutions, right? And I think that's the only thing that he really says that, well, I love the way he words this. He says, this is a, you know, we talked about how everything would be in harmony if we were all subservient to the Tao. And I gave the example of Shauna's cabin and said, that's the kind of stuff that would just be happening all the time. And look, think about it for a moment. Isn't that more fun than having, you know, millions of dollars in the bank and knowing you can take care of yourself? Yeah, it really is more fun because you don't know where the next gift is coming from. Right? It's more communicable. You know, is that the right word? You're not talking about diseases here. Is it still the right word? It's more communicable. We're sharing as a community always, you know, satisfying each other's needs. It allows us to be the manifestation of joy. You know, it's a lot of fun. But the way he words that is, all people would be at peace and the law would be written on their hearts. The law being what you are to do in this moment. So it's a beautiful, beautiful chapter. But again, the moral of the story always remains the same, no matter what chapter we read in the Tao. And the moral of the story is to be empty. Right? Be empty. Be moved by the Tao. Have nothing, none of your own, have nothing that you want to fix, nothing that you want to achieve. Right? And if we do that, then everything works out perfectly, because the only thing that ever messes anything up is our individual interference, our individual naming of problems, naming of goals. And ultimately, that's not a true interference, because that's how the Tao works, right? That's the perfection also of the Tao. But it's the Tao is always in balance because of the swinging of the pendulum. It's always in balance, but it's not always in what we would call perfect harmony. Balance and harmony are different. So we're talking about how to bring the balance into harmony. And that's by remaining empty. All right, releasing the mic. Thanks, you guys, for hanging out with me. Bye.